There we go.
All right.
We're good,
yeah. Tim Oberbruckling?
Present.
Ron Moosman?
Present.
Ron Lower?
Here.
Crystal Walter? Diana Pagan? Arthur Kim? Ryan Russell?
Present.
Jennifer Cunningham?
Present.
Abby Hoff? So this will be the last update for FY20 because we have officially spent all of the funds for this year, which is really exciting. So I'm just going to go through the most recent projects since I think around October that we funded, and then kind of give you an end cap of like our financials from the year. So this is the first one, 205 Park Court. You've actually already seen this as a CNME report, but they're doing just some kind of board and fascia work and tuck pointing the foundation, so they got a $1,781 grant. This next one is 1723 Grand Ave. They are doing roof work. We actually had quite a few that are doing roof work. This is a $5,300 grant. This is 1825 Blake Boulevard, another roof grant. $5,700.
That was a neat roof.
Yeah.
What was that?
That was a neat shape on that roof.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a cool house. 1611 Grand Ave, another roof project. This one is actually a smaller project. They're doing the back roof. They're doing a flat roof there. They're having some kind of water issues, so this will be good for their house. 1826 2nd Ave, they're also replacing their roof, and they got the full $5,000. And then lastly, this is like at the very edge of the local historic district. They are doing a wood window replacement. They're doing all of the big windows, not the attic windows, with wood windows. And this is the Affordable Housing Network, so they're fixing up that house to sell to a lower income family. So they got the full grant because they're a nonprofit. So for FY20, we funded 16 projects. If you might remember that we actually had more than $50,000 this year because we had some rollover funds and some loans that got paid back. So we've committed over $84,000 to projects in the local historic districts and one local landmark. So that's really exciting. So we have about 1,600 left. At this point, we're kind of saying we're done because I can't promise anyone a full grant anymore. But if you know of anyone who's wanting to do a really small project, we could work with them.
Roll over to next year?
Yes. And so far, I've already paid out $46,548, which is great because not only are we committing money, but people are actually completing the projects. So. We'll continue to work with the rest of the people to make sure that they finish their project and get reimbursed. So, and then I just included a couple before and after photos from this year. This was a painting project. It's really great. The painting ones are always the most fun to watch because you can see the transformation the most. But this is another one where they... fixed all the brickwork and the stairs there, and
did they pay extra for the snow?
Yes. And they also actually ended up spending a little bit more. They already got the full grant amount, but they ended up spending a little bit more just to get the like right exact color, I guess. So I thought it turned out really well. So anyway, those are just a couple before and after shots, just to give you an idea. If you guys are curious about anything else about the program, I'm happy to share more information. But
do you meet with these people personally?
I talk with each of them personally. They don't always come into the office, but we email or call.
The ones that you do meet, do they seem surprised that the city's offering this? Or are they appreciative? I mean, do they
definitely. Oh, yeah, they're definitely appreciative. I think it's been a process to educate people about the new program, like, guidelines, because it used to be either a loan or a grant, and so some people still think it's a loan, which is less enticing of a offer. So partly when they find that out, they're really excited. But a lot of people, you know, you see a lot of roof projects, which maybe are less, you know, sexy or exciting, but I think they're a great sign, because when you invest in kind of your, like, baseline, like, I need to fix this first, you're probably going to see more investment in other parts of the house later. So I'm excited to see how that will kind of transpire.
What's budgeted for 2020?
So it will actually be fiscal year 21.
Okay.
And that budget's still ongoing, but I very much anticipate getting a full 50,000 again.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Ron?
Do we have these listed on the website, projects?
Not the projects. The program is on the website.
Could we have the projects listed? Because that might be a good advertisement for people looking to see what's going on and where they might.
Oh,
sure.
Yeah,
yeah, I could do like a couple before and after photos.
The painting ones would be me.
Yeah. Yeah, just as like a...
Yeah, that's good.
I can show people. Yeah, I can do that.
Any other questions? All those in favor? Just kidding. Okay, we'll do 3B, local national historic landmark process.
Okay. So I believe it was Abby who asked for this item a couple meetings ago. So I'm just going to kind of go through. The local process is more centered around the city. The national one is more through SHPO. So just to kind of start there. So we have kind of less information about National Register, but I pulled some stuff from the, what's it called, Preserve Iowa Summit, to provide some information. So, local historic landmark nomination process. So, it can be initiated by pretty much anyone. It could be HBC, City Council, any person who wants to fill out an application. The materials must include a narrative on the historic significance, and we are kind of looking for more than just, I think this is historically significant because it's old or because this person lived there. You know, we're looking a little bit further for something more than just that. Map of exact boundaries, that's more for if you're looking at a district as opposed to a landmark, but we do ask for kind of a map of where the landmark is located. And then an inventory of historic structures and sites, so if there are multiple structures on a site or, again, a district. Additionally, we ask for the owner and then a petition. So for local landmarks, we ask for the signature of all the owners of the property. And then for districts, we require 60%, I believe, of the people in the district to sign a petition saying, and this petition has to include information about what being a district means, so kind of the requirements that are placed on their properties. Yeah, inform about Chapter 18 and historic preservation guidelines. Yeah.
Historically, do people like it or not like it, as far as you guys know? I mean, do you have support, 60% or more of support usually, or is that hard to conjure up?
Well, we only...
That just got changed recently.
We only have two local historic districts,
so,
and that those were done a while ago.
99, 2000, something like that.
Okay, so we don't really know.
Okay.
I'm just curious if people are against it or they like it.
I think, what was that?
We'll see with Beaver Woods.
Yeah, Beaver Woods might be.
I guess we'll know.
If they're interested in doing that, that might be a good test for that, but yeah.
A lot of them get confused because they think you're going to tell them what to do on the inside.
Yes.
So it's just the outside, unless something on the inside. Which
there's a big education piece.
Raising a window for kitchen or something.
And that's something that part of the process with the consultant is if it turns out that, you know, the Beaver Woods area is eligible, then part of that will be sharing with them, here's what it means, here's what it doesn't mean.
Yeah.
We had a meeting where we kind of did that, but now really to just kind of drill it home that, you know.
They're gaining, not losing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So HPC, so once the application is turned in, we have all the materials that we need. HPC kind of holds like a public hearing. So we actually have to publish it in the newspaper and send letters to all the property owners. So when you're submitting a local landmark application, we actually need it two Wednesdays before the meeting so that we can get it published in the Gazette. So just FYI. And then HPC will review it and then either approve or deny moving that application forward.
So Lauren, did you put the Bottle Works in there when I applied for local? Because I don't know. Did you or?
I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
I know I did it for Perkins House, but okay. We might have forgotten to do it for Bottle Works.
I know we went to the three readings at the council.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that has a public hearing and gets posted in the Gazette as well.
Yeah.
So we did notify the public, but we might have forgotten to do it for the HPC meeting. So there's a lot of steps to the local landmarking process. You might notice that the SHPO review portion of this is removed. So SHPO recently told us that they would like to continue to review applications for local districts, but that they no longer want to review them for local landmarks. So that's going to be kind of on staff and HPC to kind of more look at the application more closely and ensure that there is historic significance and that the application explains that.
So it's going to skip the state part?
It's going to skip it if it's just a landmark.
Yeah.
They so no longer want to.
They'll be, and so when I, Paula, just her comments, which you'll see them here for national, is no general statements. So this building is important because it was owned by this person who was significant in the development of Cedar Rapids. No, like how and why. Footnote, tell why they were significant. They, you know, bought all the property and sold it off or what, you know, whatever that is. So that was her recommendation. And then they still want to know when we have local landmarks, what those are. So
we don't have to follow the four categories like we would for a national register?
Yes, that's what's recommended.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
It just doesn't have to go through the state.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
The city would probably
agree with. So when we have, because I'm assuming we're going to continue to have local landmark designations that, you know, HPC and staff are going to look for, whether it's footnotes or something, some explanation that's not general or vague as to why something is thought of as being historic.
Just hypothetically, let's say you had something in Newbo, and one by one, each of those buildings kind of became, Newbo's probably not a good one because they have their own district, but a street, Third Avenue, and there's eight houses on the street, and one by one over the 5 years, they each become local landmarks. Hmm. Then we want to do it district. Then the state's going to be brought in. But what if they say no when those are already local? I'm just trying to think outside the box.
So quickly thinking about it, I don't know why we would do a district there. They're already all local. I don't know if there's a benefit for them then having the additional. However, if that were the case, I don't know how that would, because this is a city thing, whether it's a local landmark or not. So that's fine, but then when all of a sudden now you're bringing in state, I don't know how that would play out. And maybe that's what would happen is the state would say, no, we don't think it should be a district. Well, okay, that's fine. They're still local landmarks, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, in theory, if we follow the correct guidelines, then they shouldn't have a problem with it, right? Because we're checking them all.
Problem is that we're not always all going to be on this board. Yeah. So our views of what should be might lessen with the next group of people that think have to follow after us.
Okay.
You know, things get watered down or time things change. Which is why I always try to keep bringing up stuff to keep it fresh so it gets passed on to the next group. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. The next step would be City Planning Commission review, and then we would set a public hearing for City Council, and there'd be three readings on the ordinance, although usually the second and third reading are combined. And then at that point, it would be established local landmark, And then the process is the exact same if you want to repeal that designation. So you have to go through all of those steps again to un-landmark something.
Does a local landmark still have to be a national registered landmark?
No. It's very helpful, though, because you already have the documentation as to why it's historically
significant. But if the state's not going to look at it or
right.
care about it, it's...
But we do, you know, because, like, if staff or HPC is reviewing the application and there's not a lot of, like, information, having a national register listing is helpful. But if someone just wanted to research on their own and came up with all the information, then that's okay.
Typically, the reason people do national is there's more money behind, it's more incentives. Local, basically, just it's a heavier way to protect it
yeah.
than a national. Because mm-hmm. national doesn't care if you start taking things off, they'll just take you off the national register.
Right.
Local is going to be harder. What happens, I'll use my building for example, or, okay, Grace Church is one of the only ones in town that is not a national register, but is a local. They were denied national because of the 60s add-on. And now it wouldn't matter because we don't need to go through them anymore. But that came back when Friends did that one. It came back because they were still thinking of the church that sunk into the ground that they had to tear down, the big church. Because what's there now is the chapel. The actual church is gone. So they were getting confused thinking it was mm-hmm. the church we were doing. And they came back and said, what? Paul Moore said, what would... the guy's name, Howard Green, if he came back, would he identify with anything? So we started all over and did blueprints of the original building, what it was that it did. It was pretty extensive, the second one. So they don't always go through,
mm-hmm.
but now we're going to skip that by that side. So, do they give a reason why they don't want to see it?
It's overloaded.
Yeah, that could be it. I mean, she, and so my kind of first was like, whoa, like, who's going to be able to tell us? And that's where she said, well, I mean, first of all, if the HPC and then City Council designate, you know, recommendation by HPC and City Council says, yes, we agree it should be a local landmark, and it turns out none of that stuff can be verified, there really is not a harm. I mean, the property was still thought to be, you know, worthy of some sort of protection.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she said, as long as you're asking those specifics, you see, you know, there's no general statements. There's things that you could actually go to a source other than Wikipedia and look up what was put in there and verify it, you know.
So in essence, we could actually, as a group, go through this process, nominate one, it becomes local, and then the owner down the road wants to make it national, they may deny that.
Yeah.
No,
there's no guarantee that if you local landmark it that
yeah.
it will be a national register.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. Okay. And then this is just kind of a quick rundown of national register nomination process. So this requires a little bit more research. Well, they both require research, but if you already have a national register, making it local is easier. So research and evaluation. You have to prepare a nomination and submit it, and then the State Historic Preservation Office, SHPO, reviews it and then takes it to the State Nominations Review Committee, and then it would be listed. I think there's quite a bit of, like, back and forth
mm-hmm.
in, like, some of those middle steps.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, but that's a very, like, brief review, and you can notice that, HPC is not really listed on there, although I think HBC sometimes is like a recommending body for National Register. I think you guys have seen some in the past for that. Okay, so I threw in some slides from the Preserve Iowa Summit too. I think we've gone over this before, but I'll just go through it briefly. So here are some myths. So if you're reading the first title, it's a myth is what they're saying for listing properties on the National Register. So listing is easy. The property just needs to be old. Just fill out an application form. So their kind of speech on this was that old does not automatically mean historic, and that listing requires a lot of extensive documentation, research to determine eligibility. And then SHPO reviews, administers program, but does not research. And yeah, so SHPO will help you throughout the process, but they are not going to do that research work for you. You have to be a professional to nominate a resource to the National Register. That is also false. They talked a lot about how people with not, you know, a whole lot of experience can do it. It just takes a lot of time and perseverance to, you know, go through the documents and do all the research. So you just need ability to follow directions, think critically, good writing skills, patience. And again, SHPO will help you through it.
They like pictures too.
So you guys know this, but National Register criteria evaluation, so you're looking at A through D, being associated with an important historic context, and retaining historic integrity of those features necessary to convey its significance. Basically, it has to be attached to one of those criteria, and what am I trying to say?
Still retain the features.
Right. But yeah, this is kind of like stuff that you guys have already kind of heard about, but this is the type of things that they do or they look at when they're reviewing. Significance, don't confuse history with significance. There's history, historic context, and significance, and they don't all equate with one another. History, a series of events and facts specific to a resource. So this is an example they provided of not a good statement for why it's significant. It was constructed at this street and this street at this time, and this is what they did. That's not really a reason why it's significant. What was the impact that it had in the community, and how did that help, you know, the development of the city or that kind of thing?
Typically on these, when you read things, less is usually more, not for these. The more you put in there, even if it's bombarding them, the better it looks.
They say that especially when you're describing the building, because that's another part of it, is just talking about the architectural features of the building. They always say, like, put as much detail as humanly possible. So the context, backdrop that informs resource history and serves as the basis for significance. So they're talking about kind of all the different geographic area, background history, lots of different factors that go into the context of the building. And then significance, so what? Argument based on history and historic context that demonstrates the importance of the resource. So as we were just talking about, yes, it has these certain facts about it, but why is that important? Yeah, that was really quick, but just a good kind of refresher on the difference between local and national, like very different processes. But does anyone have any questions on that?
Abby, do you have anything to add since you're kind of in the realm of the research part of it?
Yeah, I mean, no, this was, it was fast, but it was good. I agree with Tim, more is good, way more is better. Like, these can be, like, the national resource applications can be, you know, 50 pages long.
And you can still, most people will say to bullet things, they're easier to read. You can still bullet them, but it's okay if each bullet's a paragraph. It's okay to organize it. It's just, they want to know as much as possible, because what they're trying to do is shoot it down. Not meanly.
Yeah.
But that's their job.
What's the kind of time commitment for, say, somebody's house for to commit it to either of the registers? Is that any idea?
Depends how long, how much time you have, how much time you put into it.
If somebody says, oh, you know, I want to put mine on the register, you know,
well,
do you tell them, oh, it's going to take 6 weeks.
National takes longer because you've got to do a lot more research.
Okay.
I think it took, we started with one company for Ossady, so we stopped and then went to Tallgrass. This was in 2005. Tallgrass out of Iowa City. And I think it took a good 11, 12 months to get
okay.
Because they go through
everything.
What's the property that describes the document that describes
Sanford?
The what?
Like the abstract?
Abstract.
Abstract.
They went through the abstract. They went through Wells.
It was very intensive.
They went to see what Palmer actually owned other than the Osage building, why he built it. I mean, it's.
I think
so
they usually say like 50 to 100 hours per structure.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of research.
Yeah.
Local's going to be a lot less, especially if it's already national because your homework's already done.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's going to be even less because it's not going to go through the state.
Mm-hmm.
I would still recommend, though, that.
Do your research.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but
I would recommend forever here's after 2 years. Kind of in the past, if we thought it was, it could be, and we're questioned, we pass it on to state and let them rule. But now that the state's taking out it for local, I think we're going to have to, as a board, be a little more scrutiny involved, so we're not just putting any. So when we had questions before and we were kind of on the fence, we sent it on to the state and let them decide.
I mean, I don't want to speak for her, but I'm sure we could still ask questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what their job is.
Yeah.
So national is going to be a lot, probably twice as long
mm-hmm.
as local. Freedom's was a national because they're looking for funds to restore the building. That's why most people will do national.
Oh.
Because they can apply for tax credits. So you don't get those for local.
Okay.
Local, you're going to get the protection so your neighbor can't take out all the artifacts or put in a vinyl fence, although I think we're allowing vinyl now, for instance. But so local is going to protect the neighborhood or the structure for the city to keep it historical significant. National is going to be kind of the same thing, but they, like I said, they don't babysit you, they don't have the manpower.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to qualify for money. So.
Okay.
Do you qualify for historic rehab program, but
right.
that's
yeah.
nothing compared to.
And we did it all wrong. We bought a building that probably in 7 to 10 years would have been a tear down. I mean, when you walked on the Alsady roof, it squirted.
Mm-hmm.
There was
yeah.
the back walls on the inside were turning into sand. And we were blind and dumb and stupid, and we did everything to the building and then put it on the National Register.
Mm-hmm.
We probably could have got tax credits. But I didn't know how the system worked.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you had to redo it, make it pretty,
mm-hmm.
and then they wanted it to be. But a lot of people will buy, like farmhouses and whatnot, that have a lot of historical value but are almost
mm-hmm.
falling down, and they still get tax credits to redo it. Not every case, but.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me.
Any other questions?
All of the local landmark process is on our website as well. So if you forget the steps are, check out the HPC website.
Okay. Thank you. Now we'll go to 3C, Section 106, Initiation Process. This is a lot of education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very exciting.
So when the last review we had for a demo, I think, was the 30th Street Drive or property, and the question of when there's federal money involved, you know, how does the Section 106 process begin? So thought it would be good. We've had presentations, we've shared information before on Section 106, but I don't think quite to this level. So basically just want to go through the process, how it's initiated and what happens, and then I do have some examples, one of which then is also later down the agenda as an announcement. So so the first step is initiating the process. So the federal agency is the one that is the lead on all of this. I have found out though that some federal agencies delegate this responsibility to subrecipients of their funds. But generally speaking, federal agency identifies participants in the review and if there are potentially affected properties. Second step is identifying if there are historic properties and if they are affected. So I guess one way to look at it, a federally funded road project, you know it's on this corridor, you also know it's going through a historic district. Okay, there, you know, that could be potentially affected. We don't know yet, but it could be. And then step two, you look at what the project is actually going to do, and no homes are going to be impacted by, you know, right-of-way acquisition or anything like that. So now you've determined that if it is or is not affected. And then the sub-bullet there, listed or eligible for listing on a National Register of Historic Places. So that, when they're talking about historic property, that's what they're talking about. And then step three, assessing the effects. And then this is where the federal agency brings in consultation to determine what is that effect. So maybe it's a larger structure, and due to the project, there's going to have to be some right-of-way acquisition, and, you know, maybe part of that building, maybe it's one of those buildings that was added on over time, and part of that building may have to come down. And so now you know it's being impacted. So then they get into, well, what really, you know, what is that impact, and is it really adverse? And then step four, so the federal agency works with the consulting parties, and the goal is to seek an agreeable resolution. If that is the case, then there's two documents that may be created. In Cedar Rapids, we've had both. So a memorandum of agreement. As a result of the flood, we had numerous ones of those. We also had letters of agreement, and I can't tell you what the difference is, but essentially spelling out the mitigation of impacts to historic resources. And then currently, we have one with the Army Corps of Engineers, and sometimes you'll get updates, and that's because the not only the city, but also HPC is a signatory to the programmatic agreement. Now, let's say there isn't an agreeable resolution, then the head of the federal agency is required to receive comments from the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation, and then they make the final decision. So they may, you know, decide that they liked one of the drafts of an MOA or a programmatic agreement and decide that's what they're going to do. They may take advice from the Advisory Council, or they might just say, we're not doing anything and we're doing the project as was originally proposed, impacts and all. So it comes down to the federal agency to make the final decision. So this is the 30th Street Drive. This was in the agenda packet when we looked at this. So this is a SHPO review form. When the determination is there is no historic property. And what I want to point out is section 3. So there's two main boxes. No historic property will be affected. So that was the determination there. SHPO agreed. There's a signature. There's also a federally authorized signature. So that's when no historic property is identified. And then, sneak peek, later on in the agenda, there is a review of the co-location of antennas on the Alliant tower that was reviewed through section 106. HPC gave comments. This is the form that came back from SHPO. So you see they did mark that historic property will be affected. And then you get into, okay, well, what does that mean? Is there an adverse effect or not? And the determination was that there wasn't. And then the thing I wanted to point out is this handwriting on the bottom is by whoever this person is from SHPO. And they just wanted to point out that the age of the Alliant Tower building, that we need to pay attention to that because it could be eligible for the National Register. So the building was built in 72. So I just wanted to point this out because this is not just kind of we're checking boxes, that SHPO actually did kind of take a look and you know, made that comment to let us know, which was good. So that was it. So if there's any questions.
Can we back up to the previous screen there? And we know FEMA threw some money at it, so that started the 106 process. But at what point did that form get generated, and who generated the information to SHPO?
So this is a state of Iowa form. And so in this case, City of Cedar Rapids filled this out.
So would the City of Cedar Rapids then be responsible to inform? inform consulting parties that they might want to comment on it, or is FEMA?
If it gets to that point, yes.
Well, any 106 project could result in consulting parties.
It could, but it doesn't always.
And it doesn't, but. In instances that affect us as a commission where we had to vote on a demolition, we should be considered as a consulting party at some point in time, not at the end when we're required to make a demolition requirement.
Well,
that's my feeling on it.
Sure, so let's go back up here. So it's step three is when the federal agency, or in this case City of Cedar Rapids as a subrecipient, would be bringing in consultation to talk about how is that impact to the property and if it's adverse or not. That's where the consultation process starts. So in this case, through research, there is no historic property identified. So what happens at any point in time, if there's a determination that there is not a historic, so if there's no historic resource, you're done. If there is a historic resource, but there's no impact to it, like you're not even going to touch the property or anything like that, it stops. So it's only when you get to step three where you go, well, okay, it is going to touch this building, but we don't know if that's adverse or not, and that's when the consultation process starts.
If the preservation groups and the public don't have any information that this project is even going on, then how are they supposed to avail themselves of being consulting on it? What I'm saying is that somebody should have made some notice to the public or the preservation groups or HBC that this project was going on to see if they wanted to consult on it. And based on what it was, they probably wouldn't have done it. But without that knowledge coming to the HBC,
mm-hmm.
we had no way to do it. Now, one of the things that I would recommend, and I think BC can decide on or not, that we should notify Schiphol that we would like to be considered consulting on any of these projects and come to Schiphol for comment. That way, that consultation process will come back to the HPC and we won't be left out of it.
So, to be clear, HPC was not left out of the consultation process, because there wasn't a consultation process required through Section 106.
Because somebody in the city determined that there wasn't any reason for that to be historic.
So,
and was that person qualified to make those decisions?
SHPO made that decision.
So this form,
based on
what they normally look at.
Yeah.
This form.
But that's what they're all saying.
Who provided that form to SHPO?
So city staff completed this form, submitted it to SHPO, and then SHPO reviewed the information to determine if the city was right or wrong. So let's just say that there it was actually a historic resource and the city missed that in its review, then SHPO would have sent that back.
To Ron's point, he wants to see this come across us at the same time.
And I understand that. What I'm saying is, though, that this, just to be clear, I don't want anyone to think that this process was not followed or something was skirted or someone was left out. No one was left out of any process. This process was followed.
So the person that filled out that form was qualified as a preservationist to determine that there was no archaeological processes on that site, there wasn't any historic. I'm saying that
something that was brought up to us, excuse me one second, after the meeting on the house on Indian Creek,
mm-hmm.
there should have been a survey done for digs there, because that Indian Creek was all filled with, just like what they had down by the African Museum, Indian digs and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff should
mm-hmm.
be considered, because that whole area was full of, use the word Indians, I feel like I'm being racist, but
Native Americans.
Okay. Well, and of different
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
So there could have been under that house. Now, in that case, they think the house is moved there, so anything that would have been there probably would have been destroyed anyway, because I don't think that was the original structure that we allowed,
mm-hmm.
that we voted to go ahead with.
But if we'd have been allowed to discuss that information at the time that this was being sent off to Schiphol by the city, that could have been resolved.
So, So Adam, on that form, that box where it says no historic, this city checked that box.
Yes, and then Chippo checked to make verified to make sure that
but
was.
But as Ron is saying, is
who made
is,
that determination?
Sorry, Ron.
No,
so the individual at FEMA who actually, Iowa Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, they do review, and if they get, if they receive this form with the information, they will ask questions. So if they have questions about anything they're looking at, if they think that there's something missing, they go back to the submitter and require more information.
But still, to Ron's point, who is the person that's submitting this? Do they have the knowledge to say, no, it's not historic?
So, and I would compare this to anyone doing a local landmark or National Register property. If I were to go and research my house, it's the same thing. So, and that's why SHPO was there, to make sure that that research was done right.
Yeah, but
so, I mean, it was a city employee who did research, submitted it in consultation with Iowa Homeland Security, and Iowa Homeland Security agreed with, based on the information they saw, that, yes, there was no historic property.
So, Adam, your documents of record that you're using, or the surveys and so forth, not necessarily a historical research of the city registers and so on and so forth. It's whatever is within those kind of documentation. And one of the things that we seem to keep uncovering as a commission is sometimes those surveys lag behind what the individual historic groups like the nonprofits may know of that particular piece. My concern is that the people, I don't know, SHPO can look at it, but they're only going to have the records that we provide them. I understand how we got there, and I understand the process, but are those documents or records that generated that no historic, is that
Do you mind
sufficient?
If I say something? So I think there's a difference between what the process is and what you guys want the process to
right,
be.
Right, right. No,
so, I mean, maybe that's being very basic, but this is a federal process. This is what they do for every single Section 106 or federal program. They do this review process. So I think, we can have a conversation about what more do we want, and maybe that's a conversation we can have with SHPO. Is there a way that we can, have more information sooner, or, something like that. But I just want to be clear that everything, federally wise, was followed. This is, now we're talking about what more there could be done for us to be more knowledgeable about, these types of processes, and for HBC to be involved earlier.
As somebody who has dealt with Iowa SHPO, I will let you guys know they will not let anything get past them. If they got this and didn't have enough information, they would come back to the city and say, we need more information.
Well, that's one of the things that I asked Sandy Pumphrey about last time, and because they did come back and they did ask for more information. I don't know if that's all the information that we gave them and they gave us back. And Sandy indicated that he would provide this commission with the information that he sent SHPO, and SHPO replied to and so forth. And we still haven't seen that documentation. So I would like to see copies of that, at least at the next meeting, if you don't want to email them to us, because I would like to know the whole process that the city went through with SHPO and back, because that might clarify a lot of questions we're having. But until we see that information and know the tool process, I'm still concerned. And I know that consulting parties, the different agencies, don't always have to do it, but the national people preservation groups really encourage the public involvement. And if the public can't know these things are going on, they can be involved. And I think that's a disservice to us, everybody else, and I have asked Paul Moore for more information on how we can be a part of that. But I still think that we need to draft a letter to SHPO to say that we need to know when these consultations or when these projects are going on, so that we would like to consult, we would be able to do that.
I
can't recall when Sandy was here, we asked him those questions. I thought he had signaled that going forward he would give us a heads up when they would submit this. Am I right or wrong on that?
Yeah, and part of the, yes, and I think he mentioned that it kind of slipped by him because he had gone through SHPO and Iowa Homeland Security.
Yeah.
And that's also something that has come up before, in that whenever there's a city project where we're going to be demoing something, that we'll let the commission know in advance.
Yeah, and I thought, because Ron, you had brought that up, and I think he had countered with
something that would
slip by, slip
past. Yeah, that's what he indicated, that he would provide us all the documentation so that we could see it. So.
Because with that one, the city had it on the table for a year and a half.
Yeah.
It was late, added as a late agenda item.
It was actually purchased in February of this year. Well, I think the process, the process might have started then, but the actual acquisition.
What we were concerned is we didn't hear about it until we had a demolition permit. And we should be way, way, way in the front of the when it comes to that.
I didn't hear about it until a couple weeks before it made it on the agenda. So,
but we do have it on record that they're going to do better as far as getting that stuff to us. But I can also see Ron's point. Probably can't be involved if they don't know what to get involved in. So that might be something we could ask Paula, how we can get this in front of us before it actually.
Well, I mean, that's not the, because again, she's going to, is this being followed? Answer is yes. So your question really is not the SHPO.
Can we add to this?
So, I mean, your question is, you know, do you, and that's where we've committed to with city projects when we own them, especially related to flood. That we'll review that with you guys before it even gets to on the agenda as a demolition app.
So, like, the date on this was March 22nd of 2019, I believe, the SHPO document. So I'm assuming if Sandy makes good on that, the agreement from a few weeks ago in October, we should have the heads up on this by March, end of March, or that next meeting in the beginning of April, right?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to understand it from my perspective. So if this were to come up again, we would have it rushed on the agenda October 24th. We'd be talking about this in May before the evening.
Yeah, so ideally, when the city, you know, determined, okay, this thing has been flooded so many times, it's a repetitive loss property per FEMA, we want to look at, you know, purchasing it. That would have been, ideally, he would have let me know, and we would have shared that with the commission. And then, you know, months later, it would finally then come as a demo app. But that way, at least you would have that information that this is what the city's doing and why, and, you know.
And 6 months of the day. We need that, Ryan, because we all know there's no way you can move a house in 60 days.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It takes 12 months to move a house, minimal. Unless everything just falls into order. So. Yeah.
At what point does it hit your desk, or does it?
So this one hit literally, and I think 2 weeks was actually not accurate. It was probably, I think it was days, because I was like, okay, well, I need this, and this by this time so I get it on the agenda.
Okay. That's what I'm saying. Like, as soon as you get it, send it to us at least.
And so we've been working with building services, who handles all the construction-related permitting demos, and we've been working with development services, who does all the current planning, so like zoning and those types of things, so that they both understand. And I think it's more of on development services. You know, as an example, the Loftus lumber site. So when we had the information about what was going on there, we came and gave you guys an update before you even saw the demo apps. So we're working with those other departments to make sure that we're also brought in the loop with enough time to share that with you guys.
So,
and then that is what addresses what you were talking about, Ron, is when we find out we can share that, and it's well in advance of, you know, of when whatever that action is going
to
be.
Are they supposed to share with you earlier and it just didn't happen, or are they not supposed to share with you really?
No, they just slipped because he was thinking, you know, I'm already dealing with SHPO, forgetting that, because he doesn't do this a lot.
Yep.
Yeah. So just forgetting that, no, there is actually a review process internally. He was thinking more external.
Okay. Because I'm wondering if there's somewhere in there where you guys can jump in. But I don't know how often you communicate with building services and things like that. But
probably once a day. So we're, I mean, we get calls constantly for permits for either, you know, whether it's a CNME, mm-hmm. an interview or whatever. So I think part of it is just, and after this process, so Sandy, although he was doing this, he's the Assistant Development Services Manager, and he thought, okay, let's have CD staff come in and give a presentation because they're the ones dealing with developers. So that way, and keep in mind, when a developer comes to the city to do something, I mean, it's not right when it came to their head. So,
yeah.
But at the same time, then they know, hey, okay, if you're going to be demoing these buildings, we have an internal process. And then when, you know, then they can share that with us, and then we can get that in front of you
mm-hmm.
before something might happen.
I'm just trying to think of where is an overlap where we could take advantage of that and not cause too much extra work on anyone's part.
Do you have more to this presentation?
Nope.
So where did we land on the request for the documentation that was used or whatever in the end with that? So
I will follow up with Sandy.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, because I'm just kind of curious to see what the depth and breadth is.
Yep. And I will send that out as an FTP link because
yeah.
I'm assuming it's a lot of information, and that way it's not clogging up mailboxes.
And for that one, as you remember, we could have put a 60-day hold
yeah.
if we wanted to. My question is, if we put a 60-day hold, can City Council trump that? Can they review it and say, no, we're going to not honor that hold because we have a project that needs to be finished by?
Mm-hmm. Believe that the property owner can appeal. In this case, the city would be the property owner, so
yeah.
we could appeal, I guess.
So you have 10
appeal
days.
To yourself.
But I think it would have been better to just talk about it here and maybe work out a
See, being
compromise.
In business, I just try to think way outside
yeah.
the box of anything that can...
So if Arthur wants to tear down his home, and you guys say you put a hold on it, or if it's in a district and then you're a yes or no, the property owner has 10 days... To,
yeah, I'm thinking more of city. I
okay.
realize that the public voters have that right, but
okay.
basically it's going to be the city appealing to the city.
Well,
yep.
city
to
council.
Trump.
Yep.
The city.
Yeah.
Because there'd be.
It's a very complicated.
Does that make the tennis out of
Trump? Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be similar when the city rezones its own property. It's kind of like the city is asking the city to do something.
I have another question. This might not really fall into this, but. If you're getting tax credits, and we ran into this once, I believe, to redo a building, and then X amount of years, 2, 3, 4 years down the road, someone that owner wants to tear it down, do they have to repay those tax credits?
There's probably a time.
I would assume there's a recapture period, but I don't know. We can find that out.
Wait, what was the question?
Usually 2 to 5 years.
Let's say
is.
You have a house in your or a building. We'll use one of BJ's properties.
Yeah.
And they got tax credits to do the Chelsea
yeah.
building. And then 3 years later, something bigger or better came along there, and they wanted to tear it down
yeah.
to build a bigger
Yeah, they would have to pay 5 years.
Five
it's a
five-year
recapture period.
5 years.
Yep.
Do whatever they want.
I don't want to spend a lot of time, but I'm curious because there was a mention of Indians and so forth, and I've had two experiences with the state archaeologists or the archaeologists that come out and do different things. One was when I was working up at Bruce Moore, and we needed to dig two post holes. We had to have somebody come in before we could dig. And the second one was when I was building my pond back at the farm, and we were going across where there might have been Indian remains and so forth. Is there any, do we have, I suppose we don't have any kind of maps that say where the archaeological sites and so forth are? I think we've talked about that before.
Yeah. So there are, the state of Iowa provides them, but they provide them at, I think, in 1 mile square areas, because what they don't want is to pinpoint an exact place on a map and then have some ne'er-do-well
right,
go there and destroy or steal whatever that is.
Yeah.
I think, though, there is a process, especially if you're the property owner, where you can get that more specific information, but to the general public, no.
Yeah.
Ron, to answer your question, the city does have a separate layer of the GIS map that two summers ago the intern worked on through an Excel spreadsheet that will pinpoint all the archaeological sites that were referenced in the Army Corps' investigations, and I don't know if there's anything else on there, but that's available for anybody on the HPC to go
and that got
set
big.
And look at if you want.
I just was curious if there would have been anything on the research to say, hey, you know.
Mm-hmm. I would think, and I don't know if the city staff did it because they had an intern this summer, but there has been further archaeological work done that should be added to that database. I guess you guys can check that out and update us on whether or not that got done, because there's been, since originally it was completed, there's been more work done that should be added to that. So, and again, I would think that we should be able to have that at some meeting and show it. And I did ask the state at the summit this summer, and Steve King said that the state archaeologist, I could call him and talk with him, and he probably would agree that it would be okay to do that. And maybe he would like to come up, maybe he might like to come up and talk about it and do it for us, but he didn't. Steve didn't think that there would be a problem with us doing that at a meeting, but we should ask the archaeologist if we could do it.
Yeah, because I've had John tell me, like, no, that's why we provide the information the way we do, because mm-hmm. we don't want, you know, that loss.
Well, so if you guys think that that's something worth doing at a meeting, I think we should
an actual
ask the archaeologist if that's something that we can review the sites of what was discovered through the core in the last 5 years or 10 years or so.
And the actual digs are interesting. HPC, I don't know, was it 2-3 years?
Well, it's the one that's not been updated yet, done by the African.
We were invited to go through there and go down into the digs, and then they had a car that they opened up that had Indian heads and the stuff in the pots and the stuff that they found, which I don't know where they're at. I think in the museum somewhere. So.
I think most of that went to Iowa City.
Yes?
Is there a process that has to be followed if remains or projectiles are found during digging? So, and the demolition people generally know that if they recover something, they...
Well, and I guess I'm saying that specifically as it relates to the flood control system.
Oh,
yes.
Just in general, yeah. Just making sure there's something in place so they are accountable.
That,
if they
I
are
think,
again,
and there's bones on the
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, it's
yeah,
part
it's
of the, it's like a
stop.
Well, that's
a
what
lot.
The police department probably cares.
So.
But like, if
it's,
the
yeah,
remains are found...
It's a federal law.
It's a federal
okay.
law.
It's any more questions for this topic?
Thanks, Adam.
Thank you, Adam. Okay, we'll go to action items 4A, amending the 2020 work plan to include funding of local historic landmark plaques.
So this was a request to provide funding to purchase plaques for our local historic landmarks. Are going to put a request in the budget, but we would like to put in the work plan as kind of like a, you guys are formally requesting that we do that. So secure funding for the fabrication of plaques for the city's local historic landmarks in first quarter 2020. So we'll make the request for it to go in the budget. And if for some reason that we're not able to do that, we kind of left it more vague, secure funding. So we would look for other sources to do that. But we're just asking you to put this in your work plan so that you can recommend that. So that's the presentation.
Anybody have any questions? We kind of talked about
this. We don't have plaques cost, I believe. We talked about it last time.
So back in 2015, a former staff member looked into it and found that they range between 250 and...
675, I think, or no?
Yeah, so factoring in inflation,
625,
maybe bump that up a little bit, but
it's really hard. I've tried 4 different times to get plaques, and I've done several companies. And you design it, and you send it to them, and then they get back to you, and no one's, all 4 companies ever gotten back to me.
Hmm.
And then I get busy and forget.
Do we have a round number of what we what we would be asking for?
Yes. So I believe that's 5,000.
Okay.
Yeah. So right now, so the idea is there's 6 right now, local landmarks, which that if you do assume there's no inflation and it's exactly 625, you're at 3,700, I think, to cover all 6. But also, I think just through the work of HPC and the Historic Asset Inventory Subcommittee, that and just beyond that, Friends of Cedar Rapids Historic Preservation and Safe Cedar Heritage, we're probably going to have more local landmark designations come forward. And so the idea was to cover the 6 that are there existing and then make sure that, you know, we've got money for any future ones.
That's kind of where my question was going, because you would assume that the first year would cost significantly more than subsequent
years. Yeah, we've got to catch up.
Would we want to ask for a big number up front, or do we want to cover 4 and then 2 of the 6 plus another the next year and then 4 new ones? I don't know.
So the 5 grand would definitely, well, hopefully, would cover all 6 at a minimum. But then the idea is that we would ask for this annually, so that there's, you know, amount of money to cover new ones.
And if it didn't get used, it would probably just be absorbed back into other stuff.
There's an internal process to ask that it just be carried forward. Mm-hmm. So then it would still exist. So let's say we've got 3 grand left after covering the 6. Internally, we would make that request that roll over, and then it would be available in the next year.
The nice thing, if this did go through, is we all voted several years ago, and you can find it in your handouts, to do round and where we want it on them. But we can't, as a board, say that's what you have to have.
Yeah.
But if we were going to give by them ourselves, we could dictate a little more.
And they would all match.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
yep.
So
and everything matches. Because we could say we want you to use round, this is what we thought would, but you could say it's my building, I'm going to put a rectangle on it. So if we got this, it would help.
So what I would consider, though, is that we've actually spelled this out in Chapter 18. So I would say if you want to change what that is, we can do that, but you're then amending Chapter 18. So.
But his point was they're not required to do that.
Right.
They can do whatever sign they want to do.
Yeah.
But,
yeah
it is in Chapter 18.
They're not required. I'm just thinking if the city's willing to buy it for me, I'm going to take whatever they want to buy me. It's going to save me $400.
So we can ensure they all match.
And they all match.
I think there's that. Yeah. I was going to say something that just slipped my mind. I've checked out already.
That's what my view does to you.
It's 5:35.
Yeah.
That's why.
Do I think this is exciting?
Yes.
I'm excited about this, especially
it's very
if we have more.
Yeah, very exciting.
And if it doesn't come through, maybe we could resubmit as a portion of.
And for expectation management, if for whatever reason, because of kind of we're late in that process, that we would make the request for next year if we didn't get it. And then I think just that ongoing request, so even if we do get it, to make sure that there's some funding there.
There's no local companies that do those here in Seattle.
I thought about actually going to a mortuary.
I was thinking about that too.
If we tie this in and the funding gets approved, that we can maybe use a local,
that would be nice.
local company here in Seattle. To do it.
And we do have, so we have a process that we would go through with our purchasing department, and there is a local preference.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Most nationals, they use square, like what the history building has on the brick wall out in front, if you look at it.
Yep.
And I believe yours, or not yours, but yours actually has a picture of the Douglas Mansion in the bronze, so they did like a print.
Bruce Morse has a lion head.
So you can design your national, but I think it does have to have a certain paragraph in there of
and the year it was designated.
I got some brass plaques last year for our county museum, so if you need 2 references, I can.
If you could email it to me, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you.
Did you have a question?
No, I was going to make a motion.
Yeah.
Do we need a motion for this?
Yes.
For answer? So I will motion to include the new task of securing funding for the fabrication of plaques for the city. Landmarks into the 2021 plan.
I second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passed. Okay, future agenda items. Anybody have
to suggest that we have on the agenda? Okay, number six, announcements. 6A, 1527 2nd Avenue Southeast, Churchill House update.
Okay, so wanted to go over this. I did send out an email on the 6th of December, but just wanted to reiterate what was in that and also maybe give some context. So you can see Redmond Park is off to the east there. This property is on 2nd Avenue. A couple images of what it looks like. I don't know if anyone is familiar with the term zombie house or zombie property, but it is a, typically if a house is foreclosed, or I shouldn't say typically, if a house is foreclosed, sometimes the property owner thinks they have to immediately vacate. And so what that tends to cause is an issue where that process to actually foreclose may take a long time, and so a house then is unoccupied, and as what happens sometimes with unoccupied homes, they can tend to deteriorate. Obviously, this didn't happen over a couple years. We know it was at least 10 years, but I think I did see a neighbor say it was about 20 years that it was vacant. The other thing that happens sometimes is when there is a foreclosure, the property owner just says, I'm done, they walk away. Sometimes for, I don't know if it's financial and or tax reasons, the lending institution may also basically step away. And so then you have a house that just sits there and decays over time, hence the term zombie house. So the city acquired this property from the county through sheriff's sale, and the hope was to sell it to someone who would restore it. Unfortunately, after 10 or more years of neglect, the house was in very bad condition. I know I gave an update here where I read off of the the list. We had staircases that were no longer attached. City inspectors, upon entering in the kitchen, the floor moved. That was clear sign to get out. And so it was placarded, notice and order. There was also, I know there's been a question about salvage. Because legally the city could not test for hazardous substances like asbestos, the entire thing had to be considered contaminated. And if you can't test, you can't, you know, you can't mitigate it. So the entire thing then, and then there's OSHA and some other federal laws that prohibit the salvage of the materials in that case. So it was demoed. I know there's also been a question about city ordinances, and if there's city ordinances that, you know, how does it get in this state, this condition? There is something called demolition by neglect, where a property is just left to decline to the point where then they can, you know, it's they can be demoed. The city does not have that type of ordinance because our current city ordinances cover that. There are things in place that require you to paint a wood house, to do repairs that are what a demolition by neglect ordinance does. So if you hear the city doesn't have one, that's absolutely correct, and it's because our actual property maintenance code handles those things. Now, you still have the issue of, you know, if it's someone, if you decide not to paint your house, that's fine. You'll get ticketed, and then there's a whole process that can go years. Based on, you know, court, we know there's property owners that have just said, I'm not doing what the judge told me, and nothing happens, and this can go on for years. So that's the same as if you did specifically have an ordinance that was called demolition by neglect.
And I've been trying since I've been on this board to get basically everything Adam said, there's no way they can enforce it.
Yeah.
The scoundrels guy or whatever, the hardware guy, I think he did go to jail once. The house on 2nd and 19th. The garage is falling off.
Oh, yeah.
My nephew
yeah.
was going to buy it, and I guess I didn't pan out. There's nothing they could do.
Yeah.
I mean, you have all those rules, but. And I asked the city when I first started this board to make stiffer penalties, higher priced fines that would go against the tax, the property tax. But it's hard to do.
Well, and legally, we can't do those things.
Yeah. And they may still not even pay it. So.
I will say that house that you just mentioned was purchased by Gutschmidt Properties, and he's actually in the process of fixing that house up. So that's
I just saw a dumpster leak today.
Yeah.
Which is good. Or come back. I don't know.
Yeah.
So if that was all I had, if there is any questions?
My only comment is that it's sad that
that's very sad.
However long this timeline is, that it took 10 or 20 years. I mean, I find it hard to believe that somebody shouldn't have stepped in at some point in time earlier, you know, whether it was back taxes or whatever. But I don't see how it could actually go that long without something happening. But, you know,
was it on the city's radar? I mean, did it come up a lot?
Yes, numerous citations, and yeah.
And this is kind of, I probably shouldn't say a political thing, but whenever these came across us, I know, what's the house that you showed us tonight that the group buys and they refurbish?
Oh, Ani.
They bought several without going into them and decided they were not worth saving. And it really irritated me, so I was always a single vote to no to demolition. That's one way we can send a message to the city, is everyone vote no, it'll hold it up. They're going to trump you, I believe, but it's making a statement for preservation to say, no, we can't let these houses. Because you could buy that house as an owner and a landlord, want to take it down, and we ran into this.
Mm-hmm.
We, as a board in historic industry, don't let you. So what they do is they walk away just like they did this one. I'm not saying that's what happened to this one.
Yeah.
And they let it get like this, and then we have no choice but
then it has to be demolished.
So I know that seems like a sneaky thing to say, but we could just vote no. They're still going to tear it down themselves, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there's only so much, you know, with property law that the city can do, which is why,
but
you know.
But it would create conversation. The city staff, or not city staff, city council are going to say, why did they all vote no? It's going to create dialogue. And we talk all the time about, what is that we talk about, the preservation?
Proactive preservation?
What is it?
Oh, yeah.
Proactive preservation?
No.
Proactive, yeah.
Yeah.
Also
about
awareness.
Yes.
Just as an FYI, rural Iowa has a bigger problem with abandoned houses and everything, and how long it takes to get that stuff taken care of. I understand it. But it doesn't alleviate the frustration.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
And the Chelsea building, or what was it called before that?
Knutsa
building, is a perfect example, because the city's actually guilty of this too. They bought that building and let it sit for 3 years with its brain coming in. So it's not just homeowners.
Yeah, that's not.
That's it.
It's not
the city owned it for several years and did not mothball it. They were going to take it as a teardown to use for that whole area over there.
For flood control system for the city.
And they also talked about what's the arena, there, the amphitheater, and stuff like that.
Yeah, it was for flood control for the city because the levee was right through there.
But still, when you purchase a property, regardless who owns it, you don't let it sit. Because as it turned out, it was saved. And it cost more to save it because it did sit. Anything. It's just any dialogue we can have is helping, I think. Okay, are you done with that one?
Yep, that was it.
6B, 200 First Street, Alliant Tower, and Tennis Shipboat Response.
So twice now the commission has made recommendations in terms of when these new antennas or hardware are applied, that they're secured in such a fashion it doesn't damage the wall, so ideally going into grout lines, things of that nature. Also painting them or doing something so that they match the building material they're against. And then in every case, the commission's requested for an update. You know, what did SHPO say? So in this case, the painting, or they're trying to blend it and attaching it so it doesn't do permanent damage. Those were things that were not seen as an issue, that those things could be done. And then as you saw, SHPO came back and said, hey, by the way, this property is getting to a point where it's already in a national district, but that, let me actually zoom in so you can all see this.
Abby and I brought that up.
Mm-hmm.
to the little hourglass.
You meant
right,
because I didn't know my math.
Right. No, the left. One left. That one.
Okay. So, just FYI, 200 First Street Southeast should be evaluated for a National Register eligibility. However, project will have no effect. And one of the issues with this, so this actually had gone to, so they were swapping out. This was reviewed back in, I think it was the 80s or 90s when the first antennas were put on.
Mm-hmm.
So this was the second review. But so that's really what I wanted to give you an update on, besides the fact that your recommendations were taken, thought that those could be accomplished without an issue. And then this just little extra piece of information from SHPO's review.
And that little piece is important because I believe, Ron, you brought it up, that we don't care that much. I mean, I don't care, but we're at the age where we don't think of the 60s as being valuable.
Yeah.
It'll be 70 in 2 weeks.
Weird architecture. But our great grandchildren, well, because those buildings are going to be our legacy.
Sad. The tower thing, because BottleWorks had a similar swap out. Everything went fantastic, but what was it in any of the specs is the antennas that are going on the bracket are significantly bigger, taller, and wider.
So I think that was in the plans. It was specifically said not to exceed the height of the current. I'll have to go back and look at that, because
yeah,
that was something that...
I was watching, they were doing it right out my window, so I could see what they took down and then what went up, and yeah, it was a little bigger than what I
I'll check on that.
Anticipated.
Any questions on 200 First Street? Okay. 7, certificate of no material effect updates.
So updates on these, I think you all already saw these through the historic rehab, if I'm not mistaken. So this was just the rubber matting put on the back roof of the 1611 property. Actually, this one might be new. 1810 had new roof, asphalt shingles. 1610, same asphalt shingles on a roof, and 1826 again asphalt shingles, and then the last one is the Ani house with the new wood windows.
Just a question, because there are a lot of roof issues going on, and there always will be in the historic district. There are some shingle roofs that are specific types of shingles and stuff, and how do we, as you guys as staff, determine whether they need to be replaced with like shingles versus just asphalt shingles?
So that's a very timely question, because this house was actually slate, and they reached out to me because they said if we have to do another repair with slate, it's going to cost us $30,000+ to just repair. And they've been repairing and having issues. And so we examined the design guidelines, and it says that they can replace with asphalt shingles. So we made the determination that that would be a CNME, that they can do asphalt. But we look at each circumstance. They fill out an application that says what they have currently and what they're replacing it with. And I think, except for this example, everyone else is always replacing like for like asphalt for asphalt. But we do ask that in our application.
And you do have the ability to look at the, since it's in a district, there is usually histories for all those houses.
Mm-hmm.
You do have the ability to verify what they're saying is accurate and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, we have like the nomination forms for the local historic district, and they have information on like defining features and things like that.
If the Beaver Woods becomes a district, we're going to have to be a lot more careful, because a lot of those houses have terracotta roofs.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to want to have those replaced with asphalt.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Because it's like going as you enter Beaver Park,
yep.
The big one that with the blue roof, I think that's a beautiful
yeah.
house. There's always this dog sitting in the window.
So that may...
The
that's what I was going to say.
Oh,
that might be an amendment to the guidelines, because as it states now, we can approve asphalt.
Oh, we wouldn't want that.
For the most part. I mean, I'd have to look at it again, but
Because that may be a discussion item we should have.
Yeah, I was going to say that future item.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not going to replace asphalt from terracotta.
Right. Well, we definitely wouldn't want that.
But you might not have a choice if you're following the guideline.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
we might disagree with you. You would just be following the guidelines that we've given you. I don't know that we'd want to do that in case.
Yeah.
Can we have that as a discussion on agenda item?
It's nice to see these.
Well, there might be some national guidelines on, you know, synthetic alternatives to.
Right.
I don't know if there is or not, but there could be something like that.
We have a few other small announcements, if you guys are. One being the first meeting in January, we'll have election for chair and vice chair. So we do this at the beginning of the year each year. And then also we were discussing and we thought that the first meeting in January might end up being canceled, just given that the next 2 weeks are going to be holiday time and we're not anticipating demos coming in. So we'll keep you posted, but just an FYI. Could be canceled if everyone's okay with that, if you don't have any pressing items. So, and I'll follow up with you, Tim, on scheduling a call for that meeting because it's.
Jeff, are you an intern?
No, I'm an employee.
Can you give him one of these?
Oh yeah, I can make one.
We've been meeting too.
Did we not introduce
Jeff?
No,
yeah,
sorry. We typically don't do that for new employees until they've been here a year. To make sure
they stick around.
Jeff Wozencraft. I'll let you say anything else that you maybe what you're doing.
It's also his birthday
tasks.
Today.
Oh, happy birthday!
Oh, Cash, you shouldn't have told us.
Right.
Talking a lot.
Yeah,
I will
have one.
And it was your birthday.
Yeah, I'm a planner with the city. I'm liaison for the neighborhood association program. New to historic preservation, but come from working in permanent supportive housing.
Great.
Twin.
The reason I ask is because sometimes we have interns that are only doing an internship and then they're gone.
Yeah, I apologize for that.
I just want to know how much we want to like you. Just like 3 months.
We have a modifier. Hey, you.
Okay. I think we've covered everything. Do I have anyone that wants to do 8?
Motion to adjourn. Second.
All in
favor? Aye.
Aye. You're going to have to get your name placard then.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to make one for myself.
Thanks, everybody.
Be my holiday assignment.
Yes,
you too.
Happy holidays.
Stopped.
Sorry.